9:05, time to take a close look at all of your home improvement projects, your questions, your needs. Walter Assey, of course, is joining me this morning. 514-790-0800 is the text line. And it's also the phone number if you have questions for Walter. And I'm sure you do. I can see them coming in right now. Good morning, Walter. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You're getting ready to head down to Florida.
I'm getting there. Not on vacation.
Okay, you're allowed, by the way, even if you had said.
I know, but unfortunately, it's not that part of Florida where, you know.
Yeah, you're going to Gainesville, which I said, which makes me think of crocodiles. So just be careful out there.
I know.
And, you know, Florida is that kind of place where if you type it into the, you know, put it into the Google box, it'll always give you a, on this day in Florida, something bizarre happened. So you stay safe out there.
Exactly.
You be careful.
Hit by a blip or something. You
know? No, don't.
One American dies every year.
Don't. That's true. Okay, let's get to our first call right now. We've got Lucy on the line. Lucy has a question about removing an oil tank, I think. Good morning, Lucy. How are you?
Good morning. Fine yourself.
I'm great. Thank you. Take it away.
So my parents had the indoor oil tank linked to the furnace removed. However, the pipe connecting the tank to the furnace is encased in the wall and couldn't be removed. Now, my concern is that there's still some oil in that pipe that would leak out and contaminate. Now, how likely is that to happen, and how could they remove the oil?
Remove the oil from the tank or from the pipe?
The tank has been removed itself. It's okay. Whatever residual oil might be in that pipe.
Yeah. So, I mean, the residual oil in the pipe, I don't believe it's going to be... if you wish, too big of a quantity to cause any contamination. But when we remove oil tanks, the reason we remove those pipes is to avoid accidental fill-ups, which occur a lot more than you think.
Accidental fill-ups?
That's right. So,
a delivery guy would come and, wow...
Look, we do oil decontamination, and most of the calls, believe it or not, a lot of the calls, I'm not going to say most, were due to someone removing their oil tank, forgetting to advise the oil company, and then they have them on automatic fill-up, and then, you know, there comes fall, they come, they put it, there's no more tank, and then the whole basement is flooded with oil. We've seen cases where the delivery driver... mistaken the home pumped the oil in the wrong house, which had no more oil tank. So these things do happen. They're not urban legends. I've seen them happen firsthand. That's really my worry. The other worry I have is I don't like to have a conduit to the outside that is not capped. Okay,
now,
from the inside, because I mean that's going to bring in cold air. That's going to bring in water. That's going to bring in all kind of different. Issues.
The tank was inside. So what their concern is the pipe between the tank and the furnace.
Okay, so not in the foundation wall. You're talking about the indoor pipe.
Yes,
okay,
that's got it. Okay. And it's encased in a wall, so it couldn't be removed.
Okay, I mean, the way couldn't is a bit of an overstatement because everything can be removed. They just
okay.
I'm again. That's something that I would definitely look a bit more into, because you're right. That pipe will have some oil in it, and to keep it suspended like that, not the greatest thing. Again, the quantities are not too abundant to create a major contamination, but there could be an oil contamination due to that.
So how can they remove the oil?
Well, I mean, if it's encased in cement, you chip at the cement until you get to it.
Okay, so there's no way to remove the oil without removing the pipe and, as you say, kind of breaking up the wall.
I mean, it's the residual, right? And the residual, whether we like it or not, is going to be connected to nothing. So there will be oil in that pipe. Let's not kid each other. Now, how much oil... that's another story. How much of it is going to seep out is another story. I don't understand in the first place why would they have encased it like that. But if I were you, if I'm doing all of that, I'll take it out. Now, the guys for the furnace are probably telling you, I can't take it out because it's not part of their job. They're not cement guys. They don't have jackhammers and so on and so forth. But is it the right thing to do? I will tell you no. If you're taking out the oil, you're taking out the oil. Either you do it all or you don't do it. But you don't keep a pipe full of oil encased, and now both ends are not connected to anything.
It's a big job, what you're saying, because
it depends how much it's encased. If it's just a couple of inches, it's not really a big job.
Okay.
But, I mean, my worry is both ends of that pipe now are going to be removed. So this pipe, whatever is in that pipe, is going to seep out.
So you have to do all of it. You can't just go halfway
100%.
On this one.
Can you run the furnace in order to empty the pipe? Because it's still connected to the furnace.
Well, again, no, because what is the residual? I mean, there's no way for you to gauge that. You can, but it doesn't. There's something there that's not going to jive. We don't know what the residual is in the pipe and how much of it is going to still leak and, right? Plus, soon enough, you're going to take out that furnace, aren't you?
Yes, that's
okay. So, I mean, again, so you're going to have this pipe that's going to have residual oil in it, and how much of it is going to leak, God knows. Okay. Maybe not enough to create a contamination, but again, we're working with the hypothesis of the maybes and how much and so on and so forth.
Mom wants to put kitty litter at the end of the pipe, thinking that would prevent contamination.
That is a good idea, yes. Okay, it's a good idea.
Kitty litter?
Yes, because it's an absorbent, right? It's absorbent and what have you. I would keep, actually, if that's the route that she absolutely wants to go, I would keep it in both ends where that pipe was, but I would keep it with the plastic pan. So do not allow the kitty litter to absorb the oil right on the cement slab, because at one point when it gets saturated, it's going to start contaminating the slab. But kitty litter is definitely, if this is absolutely what you want to do and you don't want to go ahead and remove that pipe, then I would go with the kitty litter solution.
I hope that helps you out, Lucy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. We have time for a text question before we head take a little break here. Hi, Joanne. Can you ask Walter a recommendation for a brand of wood windows? Does that make any sense to you? Wood windows?
Wood windows?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Pella does some. And Marvin Industries does some. Martin Industries.
So Martin and Pella, you said?
Pella, that's correct.
And just for my education, do you mean a wood frame?
Yeah, wood frame windows. Okay. Now, I mean, for example, certain municipalities will impose these. Like in Westmount, you have very, very strict rules about windows.
Mm-hmm.
So the finishing of the windows and how it's done and what have you, that's what, there's not many windows out there that do wood anymore. But these are the two manufacturers that would actually, that can provide that for you.
Okay. 514-790-0800 is the text line, by the way. And also the phone number. We have another, we have maybe 2 minutes to answer this question from Michel, or Michael, maybe in Brassard, or Mike, it says here. What is the best exterior insulation I can use with the aluminum siding in terms of moisture resistance and efficiency in hot and cold weather? Is there a product that is overall a better choice for Mike?
Isoclad. Correct. So there's many different reasons why I like the Isoclad. One of them is the insulating factor. The other one is the water protection factor. So when you install a siding, usually you put fairing strips and then you install the siding. Now, the siding, you have different types of siding. You have the horizontal, the vertical. Then you have what you call the shingle siding. The shingle siding, you have to double up your fairing strips. So what happens between the fairing strip and the cladding of the home and the structure of the home, if there's any water that seeps down, if it's going to seep down on wood, it's going to start rotting that wood with time. The Isoclad is waterproof. It's an insulation. And at the same time, it's a great product.
All right. 514-790-0800. Text line, the phone line, lots of calls coming in. I see you all. We're getting to you in just a moment. You are listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey. I'm Joanne Brakes. Welcome back. You are listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey. 514-790-0800 is the phone number and the text line. We've got lots of messages and phone calls coming in. Glenn has been patiently waiting on the line. He's got an issue with his toilet tank. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. I'd like to ask a question about my toilet tank. It's blowing air every once in a while. And is it an adjustment I need to make? Or is there something you can advise me on?
Yeah, there's a few things. You're probably going to have to go through a bit of a checklist. I mean, usually that happens due to a couple of reasons. One of them, it could be a blocked line somewhere in the toilet. So that clog will create this negative pressure. So instead of air flowing through the lines, the air pushes back and causes a gurgling sound. Sometimes you'll even see in the toilet itself water bubbles. And sometimes it's actually the toilet, believe it or not, that is partially blocked the drain. So the easiest way to kind of go through your checklist is flush your toilet and open the cold water faucet in the vanity or the sink next to it. Try that first. If that doesn't work, try to pass a fish just to see if you have a partial blockage in the toilet itself. In the toilet drain, I should say. If that doesn't work, then start looking if there's a blocked drain somewhere in the toilet tank. So, I mean, these are really the three things you have to kind of go by process of elimination. I mean, obviously, the easiest one is flush your toilet and open the cold water, see what happens. Second one is...
How would you know that it's that if you...
Well, I mean, it will stop doing it.
Oh, okay. Right?
So it will stop doing it.
So simultaneously, that should fix
correct.
It. Okay.
Correct. I mean, it fix it. It's one of these trick solutions that are, if you want... the other one is just ensure that you don't have a partial blockage in your drain. So, you know, either by passing the plunger just a few times to see if that helps... Or if you have a fish, that would be awesome.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can I ask you one quick question also on crank windows, a name of a grease I can use for the gearing?
Name of a grease. I mean, WD-40 is always a good choice. No other brands come to mind per se. Have you tried with WD-40?
No, I haven't tried anything.
Yeah, try with WD-40. That's usually, that's a trick.
I'm not concerned about loosening it. I wanted to, as a preventative maintenance, maybe put something there. Is that a good idea?
I mean, look, do you feel that it's getting to be, WD-40 does not do any corrosive issues at all. So that always would help. But if you find that there's a squeaking or there's something that's starting to look, a bit tricky with it, then fine. If not, I don't see the use of it, to be honest with you. But again, it doesn't hurt. Like it's, putting WD-40, that's what I like about it. It's not going to hurt the mechanism of the window. Although in a lot of cases, when we're shopping for windows, that's why I always advise homeowners to go with windows that have a double reinforcement for the mechanisms, and that's rare. Very few manufacturers will think about that. The higher end windows usually would have that, so there's a lot less stress on the hinge system itself, because that's pretty much what breaks down first is the mechanism before the actual pane or the window itself.
Okay.
All right, Glenn. Thank you for calling in. Randy's been waiting patiently on the line. Randy has, Randy has some questions or a follow-up, Walter, on the oil pipe, right? Randy, good morning.
Good morning.
Take it away.
Yes, I was listening to the issue with the oil tank, and I've removed lots of oil tanks, lots of oil furnaces. And what I do is I close the valve at the oil tank, and I run the oil furnace until the line empties. After that's done and we disconnect everything, we blow the line out with compressed air, okay? And if the line is concealed in the floor or the wall or whatever, there's no problem. If you want to, you can even put water through it to make sure the oil is all completely out, and then you just cap the lines, you squeeze them. You know, you pinch them, you squeeze them, then there's no danger whatsoever. Also, there was a question about leaving the pipes in the wall. That's a tricky one because I always take the pipes out.
Mm-hmm.
The filler pipe and everything, I always take it out. And if I don't take it out, what I do is I put a 2-inch cap on the inside, and then I put a red flag on the outside for the oil company not to be able to fill it up, you know.
Does that make sense for you, Walter?
It does. For the pipe itself on the outside, that's a red flag right there, and that for many different reasons. I mean, the filling it up by mistake is very common, unfortunately. But I mean, there's nothing good that can come out of that long term. So that's definitely a good idea to remove it at all costs. It's a hole in your foundation that you don't need, so it might as well you just patch it and get away with it and not wait for it to cause problems. As far as the blowing of the air, that's fine as long as you know blowing the air into something that is catching it on the other side. We don't want any oil to drip on the floor or the slab or anything like that. So I mean that works as a system for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, what I do sometimes, I blow it out either with nitrogen or compressed air, whatever I have. And I've even blown, the residual with water and then blow it out again. So there's nothing in there, right? And then I pinch the lines if they're concealed. Most of the time, they're not concealed. Most of the time, you can just
remove them.
Yeah.
The fact that you're capping both ends helps because we can't be 100% sure that we've gotten rid of all the oil. So you're capping it, you're blowing it, you're going with all the right steps to ensure that you are minimizing the risk of any contamination. So that definitely works.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks for calling in with that. 514-790-0800 is the text line and the phone number. We've got a text here. We didn't leave a name. Remember to include your name when you do text. It says, I would like to grow ivy on my red brick home, but my Debbie Downer husband says no because he says it's going to ruin the brick facade. Is this true?
Very, very true.
Okay.
You can't choke up bricks and mortar. Bricks need to breathe. That's why we even say do not paint bricks and mortar, because especially the mortar part. So anytime you have build up humidity or water or anything like that, it needs to be pushed out somewhere in between the cladding and the brick. And when you choke it up like that, what's going to happen is that the mortar is going to start deteriorating, it's going to start flaking, it's going to start pushing out. That's beside the fact that you're going to have bugs very close by to your
I was going to say, see, yeah. Walter and I were talking and one of our last homes that my husband and I had, we did the side of the wall was beautiful ivy, but when the insurance guy came, he said, you got to get rid of that.
Yes.
Like yesterday.
That's correct.
So there's never a good moment. It's never good for the actual house.
It looks good to look at it. But I mean, the long-term effect of it is not that great. Between the brick or the mortar deteriorating, between the buildup of humidity behind the brick, which is going to cause eventually the brick facade to bulge.
Mm.
So you said
you could paint the bricks, but
no,
you...
But again, you're sealing the mortar. Right. So, I mean, the idea, we always go back to the mortar. You don't want to seal the mortar because, again, when you seal it in place, you're not allowing the humidity to push out. And that's going to create issues.
514-790-0800, the text line. The phone number, Walter has the answer to your home improvement questions. You're listening to The Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey. I'm Joanne Brakas. Welcome back to The Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey and Joanne Brakas with you as Walter continues to take some of your questions about home improvements, your conundrums, your questions. 514-790-0800 is the text line. It's also the phone line. We've got Kathy on the line who's been waiting patiently. Kathy, you've got some more on this oil heating system. Good morning, Kathy.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a two-part question, so give me a chance to ask both questions.
Go ahead, Kathy.
They're very related. Okay, so we heat our home by dual energy, oil and electricity. And yesterday, the technician came to do the yearly maintenance, the cleaning and so on. And he told us that in 5 years, oil furnaces will be banned. There will be no more oil deliveries, etc. So the part one of the question, is that a fact, number one? Number two, just by pure coincidence, we received a letter from our home insurance provider at the same day, and it said that our oil tank is now 19 years old, which we didn't realize it's that old, and we need to replace it because the contamination, the oil contamination part of our home insurance policy won't be renewed unless we do so. So, in fact, should we go ahead and replace the tank, or is it true that a dual energy system, an oil furnace, will be banned in 5 years?
Walter?
Okay, so I'm going to just run you down through what the laws are right now. I didn't hear about it being banned in 5 years, but this is what's going to happen potentially in the next 5 years. Your furnace technicians are not allowed to repair a failure of a major component on your oil furnace within the next, I think by 2020, well, we are in the actual year.
Right, yes, I read that. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So that's one of your biggest hurdles. If you have something major component, major that breaks down in your furnace, then you are not allowed to, they're not allowed to fix it for you. So if you are in the dead of winter, now you have to wait for a new furnace. And you, as you know, this is not a 1 hour job. So you're going to probably be out of heat for a couple of days. By the time you place the order, they come and see you, they get the machine, and so on and so forth. So that's one major issue you're going to have. The second issue you're going to have is the lack of production of spare parts. Now, all the manufacturers have stopped producing oil furnaces. So you're going to start missing parts, you're not going to be able to find it. Even if it's minor, with time, it's going to be phased out like anything else. A bit like halogen bulbs right now, you can't find them almost. You go through Amazon and you have to pay $135 for a bulb just because you can't find it anymore.
Wow.
Type of thing. Mm. So it's the same concept. That's where you're going to really start running into problems. I haven't heard about it being banned completely in deliveries and what have you. It just probably the fact that's being phased down that aggressively is going to lead you there anyways. Now, if you're doing a conversion, the big subventions have expired, but there are still subventions. So now if you want to replace the oil tank, you already have an investment of a few thousand dollars, a couple of grand. So that's number one. But the government also kicks in about between 2000 and 2850 if you're replacing the whole system. So if you combine these two investments together, you're already at a new furnace. Because a new electric furnace is about anywhere, depending on the size of the house, but anywhere between $4,000 to $8,000 and the brand and everything else, right? So it won't make any sense for you to throw more money at your oil furnace for those reasons. The fact of the matter is when you go electric, you don't even need to pay that yearly maintenance that you're paying right now. So that's another plus.
Go move ahead, like just think of the future, not 100%, put the Band-Aid.
100%.
Get the new system.
There's no, when you're throwing money at a system that's going to be phased out, if it's not this year, it's going to be next year or the year after. Something is going to break down. They can't replace it. You're going to have to replace the whole thing. So better do it on your own. Planning and your own, if you want.
Timeline, really.
Timeline, because, you know, in a couple of years, they're going to tell you, Murphy's Law, it's going to happen in February, in the coldest day of the year, it's going to break down.
Is it really expensive to do that?
It's not expensive. I mean, depending on the brand and the size and of the home, what have you, it's an investment anywhere between $4,000 to $8,000. So it's not that expensive. And the fact that the government kicks in subvention, the fact that she's already going to have to spend money on her oil tank, it makes it even more affordable for her.
Kathy, what do you think?
Well, how much did you say that to replace an oil tank? It's a couple of $1,000.
Oh, yeah. It's anywhere, depending on the size and everything, but anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000.
I see. It's just that
it's the only, sorry, Kathy, the other problem is if you have oil in it. because now you have to suck that oil out. So that's going to cost you money. They charge you actually to suck the oil out.
Okay, if we replace the tank, yeah, we're down to about a third right now.
There you go.
I see. Well, we don't know how long we'll be staying at our house. We've been here for many, many years. We're seniors. Mm. And so anyway, it's something to think about. So basically, it's not really worth it to replace the oil tank is what you're saying.
That, I mean, I would have serious reservations on that type of an investment. The other issue that, I mean, because we do hear that, I'm selling the house in a few years, this and that. Okay, well, I mean, what is there a guarantee that in the next few years it's not going to break down? If it breaks down, you just out $2,000 for your oil tank and another few thousand dollars to replace the furnace. So it's a lose-lose. Now, if it doesn't break down and you're lucky and you sell the house, the first thing the inspector is going to put in his report, guess what? Oil
That's
tank,
true.
It's not legal anymore. You have to replace it, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah. So
right.
they're going to remove it from the tag of your
right.
home price anyway.
Right.
It dings her either way. She's got to
yeah,
take care of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kathy,
yeah.
I hope that helps you.
Okay, it makes sense. Thank you so much.
All right,
Thank
have
you.
A good Saturday.
Thanks. You too.
Okay,
you.
Now a question from our text line, 514-790-0800. That's the text and the phone line. Send those questions. And it says, I have a question about an AC heat pump. We want to get an AC central unit in our home. Is it better to get just an AC unit or a heat pump AC unit? We have a two-story small home currently heated by baseboards on the bottom floor. No heat source upstairs. And are there any grants available?
She's not doing a conversion, so I don't know about the grants. Definitely the heat pump component is a no-brainer.
Mm.
Especially now, they heat up to minus 30.
Really?
So it's just the right way to go. Now, in her particular case, even more so. The worst type of heating you can put in your home is electric baseboards.
Really? That used to be like the standard in the 80s.
That's correct.
Yes.
And that's probably the worst standard you can ever think about because it burns the air. It burns the particles and it makes it super dry. So it's
the dry
not,
air of, right. of when we were kids.
Correct.
Yes.
So it doesn't, it's really not healthy to have electric baseboards to begin with. And if you do, you have to humidify like adequately in every room and what have you. So having said that, if you put a heat pump, it's a healthier way of heating to begin with. And it's a cheaper form of heating. Because it's, the heat pump does not take as much electricity to heat. So it's a win-win for her. And the price is not that much more.
I was going to ask, what's it, when you say not that much more, like that?
A few hundred dollars.
Okay.
So it's really worth it. The installation is the same. So for the technician, they don't charge you more to install. That's the thing. And the biggest portion of usually the installation of a system like this is the labor more than the parts.
And what happens if you do have a bunch of these old baseboards in the house? What do you do to get rid of
them? Well, I mean,
them?
You can keep them as auxiliary heat because if I understand them correctly, they're probably going to have a split located somewhere, which in minus 30 or minus 40 days might not be enough. So the baseboards now will kick in as auxiliary heat, but the principal or the main heating source becomes a heat pump.
I'm looking at Walter right now just because he reminded me. I've been away, for 3 years, and you just said minus 30 and minus 40 days, and I just remembered that's coming. Sorry. Go on. So you keep the baseboards for those days, right?
You keep the baseboards for those days as auxiliary heat. That is correct. Now, if you do that, the other aspect of it is if you're going to do that, just make sure you have a digital, up-to-date thermostat. And that usually will kick in only when it realizes that the heat pump is not doing its job.
Perfect. You are listening to the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800 for your questions, your text messages as well. Here's Walter Assey, and I'm Joanne Fracas. Welcome back. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, sitting right in front of me. I'm Joanne Fracas as we continue to take your questions on all of your home improvement needs, 514-790-0800. 514-790-0800 is the text and the phone number line. Walter and I were just having a really frank and open discussion about the fact that when people come into your house, I think one of the reasons people appreciate Walter, and we were saying this, is that you're in a situation of need. You're asking them for, you know, I need you to repair this and this and that, and money needs to be exchanged. And right away, people get on the defensive. The relationship becomes tense, and you're there to tell people it's okay, right? We'll get through it together.
So, I mean, it's a simple thing. Usually, most of these problems in homes should go through a checklist before we say it's a total loss, if you wish. And, you know, I know in the most drastic of measures, a lot of contractors would want to go to the fastest but the most radical of solutions.
And you're saying, hold on a second.
Yeah, because sometimes you're over-analyzing or over-exaggerating the issue. You know, a good contractor will rely heavily on what's available as technology to back up his decision. So if we are checking for water damages, we don't say, oh, it's probably the water destroyed the whole ceiling, for example. No, we have machines. We have thermal imaging cameras. We have moisture testers. We have lots of technology available to us now to make a more educated decision.
And step by step, right? And I think that's one of the things that, or you call in and you ask Walter your questions. Speaking of that, we do have a text coming in from Cheryl, Walter. Cheryl asks this. Hi, Joanne, can you please ask Walter how to get rid of a scent coming from around the toilet bowl floor that was installed 3 years ago? It seems that the caulking is cracking around it. Ugh.
So I'm just taking a wild guess. This is not a nice scent to refer to.
It's roses. It's okay. Lilac, Walter. Of course.
So I don't... The caulking of around the toilet is an urban myth. That's not supposed to be there. It's not supposed to be stopping the water.
Wait, say that again. It doesn't really do anything?
I don't even like to install caulking in most cases, because if there's a leak in my toilet, I would like to see it come out from the sides.
Ah.
So what's more important would be, for me personally, is the wax seal. And I think that's where her problem is. So every time the wax seal around your toilet have an expiry label to it. When you go to a bathroom that is 40 years old and the toilet is as old, I can guarantee you the wax seal is all dried up. So it's a question of time where the toilet is going to start seeping water, and then you can start smelling stuff. So in her case...
You can't see my face right now, but it's not... It's ew. Okay, yeah. So this seeps water after... How many years should it...
Well, usually it's 10 to 15 years, the wax seal lifespan, right?
Okay.
Sometimes it's a question of an inadequate installation if the toilet is new as well. We've seen that happen often, or inadequate wax seal installation or what have you. So there are different reasonings depending. If your toilet is more than 15 years old, chances are the wax seal has dried up and you need to update that.
Does that require,
we're removing the toilet and then we're changing the wax seal. That's pretty much what it is.
Is this a do-it-yourself kind of thing?
If you are handy, yes. If you're not, then you call in a plumber. But it's not a complicated thing to do per se.
So you say every 15 years you should check it, or you'll just notice it when it starts to smell?
I mean, if you're going to check it and you're going to get there, might as well you replace it. It's not an expensive part to replace, right?
I have someone writing in here, Just Juice, saying the wax seal is called a puck. Did you know that? A puck, not a hockey puck. Or maybe this person's pulling my leg and I'm just
saying. I don't know what. Yeah, I've never seen.
Okay. 514-790. Oh, actually, no, we have time. We have time. I did want to talk a little bit about, in terms of, because I'm going to be talking on the show tomorrow about cottage country, cottage country bugs, cottage country issues. That's going to be on Weekends with Joanne Brakes. In terms of checks for what kind of bugs can damage any wood out in the country, we talked about this a little bit off the air.
Yeah.
You said don't look at just your country house. Look at your city house. What are the bugs that we're looking at right now?
The worst one that you don't want to have in your house are either the carpenter ants or the silver flies. Silver flies usually is due to humidity. The carpenter ants is also due to humidity. Carpenter ants usually would... they don't feed on the wood. There's a misconception, actually. They live inside the wood, but they like wood that is humid, so they chew on the wood itself. So if you have some type of a water damage on your wood structure or a humidity of some kind, usually carpenter ants is an indication that there's something behind the wall that you're not seeing.
So when you see the carpenter ant, you know that their damage is bigger.
There is somewhere usually a hidden damage in a cavity that you need to seriously look at. Because, you know, I've been involved in many cases where the carpenter ants ate the structural beams, the headers, and literally created structural damage in homes.
Wouldn't you notice it as it happens, or no?
You would not. That's the thing. You see carpenter ants.
What do they look like? Just remind
me. They're usually bigger. I mean, you could Google them. Usually bigger than your regular ants.
Same color?
They have a reddish tone to them, if you wish. But I mean, again, it's anything that is a big ant, I would investigate. That's, let me put it for you this way, just to simplify it, a bigger than usual ant, not the small ones that you usually
just
would
the
see.
Ones that come out every summer. Yeah.
So these ones are the bugs that you really don't want to see in your house. And if you do, then you really want to start looking at where the water is coming from.
So who do you call first, the exterminator or the contractor or
the
both?
The exterminator will band-aid and bubble gum the issue. Because the issue is not you don't want to see them in your house anymore. The issue is, okay, where's the colony? So you want to zero down on the colony. Now, there's many ways to do zero down on the colony. If you know you have a chronic area where you have a water damage and it's often happening, then you zero in on that area, you do a thermal imaging, you do a moisture count, and then you realize, okay, and then you see what the possible causes are.
There's no spray or something to put in ahead of time to prevent this from happening. They're coming because there's water damage.
They're usually coming because there's some source of humidity in wood somewhere. So they need a certain level of humidity, moisture in the wood
itself. They're the symptom. They become the problem, but they start off as a symptom.
Exactly. So, that's why I would say you do thermal imaging. You see where the envelope is being affected the most, and you zero in on. If you solve that, you don't need to even use an exterminator afterwards, because you take out the whole colony almost when you take out the rotten wood.
The whole colony. Ta, ta, ta. All right, that does it for us. That was Walter Assi, president of Renovco. I'm Joanne Brackus. Thank you for listening. We will be back next Saturday with a brand new show.